So welcome everyone to this interview where I'm really excited to be talking with Turiya Hanover. Firstly, Turiya, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. I feel very happy to be here.
It's going to be fun. It's a while since we did something like this together. So I'm looking forward to spending some time together. To give people a bit of a taste, we're going to be talking about some of the impact of trauma, particularly the impact of trauma on feelings of isolation, disassociation. And I really love how we're going to come into this, not just in the context of the individual, but also how this relates to the bigger collective and the environment as well. Just to give people a bit of Turiya's background, Turiya has been the co-founder of the Path of Love process with Raphael Morgan since 1995. They also created a school for essential counseling and a year-long training called Working with People Trainings since 2010. She's been working for 45 years as a psychotherapist, that's a long time, psychotherapist, long trainer, time. And mentor, as well as leading groups all around Europe, the US, at Omega Institute, Brazil, Australia, South Africa, Israel, working with thousands of people from various cultural backgrounds. Turiya's work focuses on bridging therapy and meditation and bringing transformation and healing to people to help them awaken the embodiment of courage, love for the truth, inner support, compassion, and curiosity. She helps each individual to fulfill their potential of their inner journey home to the luminous self. Turiya, I think a great place to start would just be to set a bit of a frame for this conversation around some of the impact of trauma, how trauma can create feelings of isolation, disassociation, and numbness.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you work with trauma yourself. So, and I have been, you know, from the 90s on, really more and more see the impact of trauma. Trauma is actually only discussed or come into the main field in beginning of the 90s. You know, in the 80s, nobody talked about trauma. It didn't exist.
No one got traumatized.
You know, no matter what we did and what happened sexually, nobody talked about it. You know, it was just not in the field.
Which was its own source of trauma, right?
Yes, of course. But I mean, you can also see the collective is ready to face this right now out of some kind of reason. So there's also some kind of an awakening happening in awareness and in being able to face these issues. But of course, then now you can see almost, you look at, and there's so much traumatic influence in our lives. You know, it's almost like all over the place. Even now, we have to deal with COVID, what is a trauma in itself. You know, for so many people, they're isolated, they're on their own, they're freaked out in their mind, they get so many informations, they don't know what's true and what's not true. I mean, and it's a bug that you can't see, you don't know if you're going to get it or not. You know, that's really, really scary. Yeah, then you have climate change. Suddenly you have the fires happening in Greece and in Turkey and, you know, people burning everywhere. You know, we had the fires in Australia happening big time. So climate change is another thing. Suddenly it's like, hey, hello, where have we been the last 20 years? You know, suddenly we're getting the big bill to our behavior. Yeah. So that in itself is a collective trauma that people generally get freaked out about. A lot of people get freaked out about. It's not personal trauma in that way, you know, unless you lose somebody from COVID or something. So,
and it also strikes me that I felt when COVID first happened, there was a sense of everyone was going through this experience, and obviously everyone had a very different experience, but there was something in a sense that was unifying about that. And then we had this growing kind of different opinions and perspectives. And it feels like, if anything, through the information wars, it almost feels we're more fragmented than we ever have been, in a sense. And somehow climate change can do the same, that it, because of people's different perspectives and realities around it, these issues that could bring us together actually seem to cause more disconnection.
Yeah, but I think what happens is because there's so much fear, And then in for people in order, because we dissociate from fear because we don't want to be afraid. You know, it doesn't fit our culture, doesn't fit our personality and our ego structure. So in, I think for people in order to fight fear, they go up into their head. And then if you have an opinion, you know, this is the right one, or I belong to that group, I am for this and against that, whatever it is, you know, it gives you a sense of course, security, even though it's, of course, a false security. But I think people go to that because we're so overwhelmed with so many challenges. People don't know how to handle it. You know, all we do is dissociate. You turn on the telly in the evening, you get one horror news after the other. Then you see the whole Afghanistan happening. You go like, oh my God, you know, how horrible is that? Yeah. You know, and so we are constantly overrolled with very, very traumatic visual impacts on TV in between. And then, so you're already on too much. So people dissociate, drinking, alcohol, addiction, anything will do not to feel, you know, we become numb. And in that numbness, we go into isolation. Yeah, that numbness creates isolation, you know, because I'm not really connecting anymore with anybody. Yeah. And then in between, you have the in-betweens, you know, the advertisement, they're always a little bit louder. And then you get rolled over with buy this, buy that, you know, right. Get more, get the next Tesla. So you're constantly overrolled, you know, by too much, too soon, too fast. What is the trauma vortex, basically? And what people do is they numb out, you know, and you instead of coming together, we become islands, we become isolated, you know. And I think people, the isolation in these days is so, so big. People are, there are so many people who are lonely, you know. The whole mental health situation is just spiking up like never ever before. You know, and it's so people are isolated and they don't know how to reach out besides through the internet or Facebook. What's like a fake connection? It's not a real human connection. You know, it's just like, yeah, we have the same opinion, but it's not real connection from the heart, from the body. So yeah. I think it's an epidemic today. It's really intense. And I don't even know how people deal with it if you don't have the understanding of coming back to the body, grounding yourself. Stop watching, get out of, you know, Facebook and all the social media and go into the woods and touch a tree and say right. Hello to your child, you know, connect to your kid when it's crying instead of give him the iPad because you're so overdone that you can't deal with it anymore. Yeah.
I think the point you make is also really important to be clear that people can think, well, I'm connected all the time because I'm on social media and I'm talking to friends on WhatsApp. And never have we been more connected. And yet never has the potential to feel alone been so great.
Exactly. It's like a false connection that we have. Of course, it's better than nothing. You know, if you're home alone and you have a friend that you can at least talk to, but on the internet, it's better than have no connection. But on the other hand, it's not a real connection. You know, it just is a connection, usually more through ideas or through whatever we share.
Yeah.
But and then to learn on the internet, even in Zoom, as we do all these Zoom teaching, to teach people how to then connect and be in the heart while we're on internet, that in itself is a new tool to learn.
Yes.
You know, most people don't have that. And I think this is one of the advantages that we are here to experience and to help people to come more into a different kind of connection than just the physical connection. But for most people, of course, it's very difficult. Yeah. There's so many people who are isolated right now. You know, it's really quite something.
Yeah.
Or in relationship trouble because you have to be with each other the whole time. You don't even know each other. You've never been with each other for such a long time.
Right.
Most people go like, what? Who are you? You know, or how many fathers haven't been with the family and the kids for so long? Suddenly, Oh, that's what it's like. Interesting.
It is. I mean, just on a personal level, it's been an amazing blessing in many, many ways. And never have I had more respect and appreciation for my wife and what she does. Just, you know, being around to witness it day after day, as opposed to being at work and then coming home at the end of that day. I know we're going to come a little bit into some of these dynamics and differences between male and female energies. And I think it's probably helpful just to put a bit of frame around this. I know that sometimes the use of some of these words can be a trigger or can be difficult. And I think it's perhaps helpful just to contextualize how we're using those terms as we then come into some of this.
Okay. So What do you want me to define?
I think particularly when we talk about male and female, I know that for some people that in of itself can be not the way that they perceive things, let's say. But of course, we're talking more about energies that we all have as opposed to necessarily physical gender.
Yes, that's how I see it. I see it more like an energy that everybody actually embodies completely different. That's my personal experience. And the more ways we have how you should be as a man or how you should be as a woman, the worse it gets. Things are changing so massively within the last 40, 50 years. You know, if you look at my mother's, probably your grandmother's, it's like, how they talk to each other, the life they lived is so completely different how we talk to each other today. They had no way even to talk to each other. You know, we have a whole different understanding what it means to be a woman or being in this female body, let's say it, or what it is to be a man. Things are so in enormous revolution. And of course, like all revolutions, first chaos breaks loose. It's like that. There's no revolution without chaos. It's not like, yeah, nicely, we're going to do the next step. So it's like that, you know, all the abuses coming up, or so many things are coming up that we haven't dealt with before. And suddenly all that is there, you know, and everybody is in chaos. But I think the less we can define it, the more I can trust my own body. What does it feel for me to be a woman? Yeah, and what is it for you? And what is it for somebody that is maybe in a male body and feels like a feminine woman? Yes. I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, how can I talk about that?
So that with that frame, I want to talk a little bit around women, or to put it in other language, that more feminine energy. Why? What has been the impact that leads to the disconnection that so many people experience from their bodies these days?
Well, especially women, because we're so oriented towards fitting in or finding a man who we want to have, let's say, children with or a partner, you know. So I think we have been conditioned for centuries to fit in with you. And I think that's a very female conditioning, you know. I do something so that hopefully then you would love me. And I think women have that extremely, we have really refined that over centuries. Yeah. So in that way today, so of course you as a woman, you're constantly, you know, you have to be skin enough. You have to be, your tits have to be the right size and, you know, so today everything is about the outer looks and completely disconnected from who I feel in this body and who I really am. You know, and you can see how the cosmetic industry today is like, I don't know. And every time you do something, you cut something, you do something, it's just saying, I hate myself as I am, you know? That's just another way to say it. And I try to fit in so that maybe one day I'll be attractive, you love me, and I'll get the right partner or whatever. Yeah, so I think for women it's extreme, and extreme in that is also allowing abuse, because you don't feel somebody rolls over you, okay, it was good, but you don't really feel, you know, you don't really, and that's where women now with the whole Me Too thing, of course women come up, and of course you know, there's anger there, and that is the first step to come again into energy. It's a trauma response, as we know. You know, that violence comes, boom, and then something else comes, and then the connection hopefully will come. But I think it'll take a while. That's my feeling.
It's like there's so many ideas of what our body should be, how it should look, how it should feel, that it's very hard to know what's actually truly there. And maybe you can speak a little bit to that, the difference between the sort of idealized and the sort of expected, as opposed to what it actually is, to just sense and to feel and to open to one's living experience.
I mean, we get tuned into that outer image from early on. You know, I don't know how many times somebody says to you, you're too fat, your legs are too long, too short. You constantly get some negative reflection from the outside. And of course, what happens, you feel ashamed for having this body. You know, and in that shame, you start to disconnect. And in that disconnecting, you're more outer-oriented. You know, we go to the outside and we hope the outside will give us the tick off and say, you are a good woman, you know, or you're beautiful or you're sexy. Even on Instagram, when you look today, how many people do this improve of the photo so you look younger, have less wrinkles and so on. I mean, it's the sign of our time. We follow image, and the more image we follow, the less we trust really our bodies, you know? And of course, that's painful. When you really feel into it, when I work with women, there's so much pain there when you really go into the depth of it. It's like, you know, how much did I betray this? What is like a divine creation, you know?
Well, as you put very powerfully a bit earlier, it's a fundamental rejection of one's true nature to reject that, to become this other self that we think we need to be loved, to be safe, to be respected in the world.
Yeah. And out of that, of course, we become very pleasing, you know, so I please you. I try to accommodate you. I try to make it right for you, you know, so and the or for the image that I meant to present, and we become disconnected from this. Is the body is a divine, is a vehicle into the divine, into being, into presence, into who we are. And our bodies are very, very different. Not one is the same. You know, but I don't know. I work with so many women, you model women, so beautiful physically looking, like, and they still hate some part of their bodies. They still feel like, I'm not good enough, nobody will love me. You go like, what are you talking about, you know?
And I think people are sometimes shocked to hear that because their belief is, if I had that body, then I would love myself and I would be loved. And exactly. To discover that's actually not the reality.
That's exactly so. And it's almost 95% of all the women in the groups have a huge thing around the body, self-denial, self-criticalness, an enormous amount of shame, and an enormous amount of unworthiness. Suddenly, who am I actually on my own when I just stand here as a woman? Who am I if I'm not married to you and have five kids and whatever our life, you know, whatever we get engaged in our life. But just to me as a woman, can I be a beautiful being, big or small, whatever size, black or white, yellow or whatever, you know? That's a real big, it's a big, I think that's partly why I work a lot with women, because I feel like there's a real key. And once women start to go into the body, then also all the embodiment starts to happen, you know, because it then creates the connection to nature immediately. Yeah, it immediately moves into because the woman's body is nature, really, in a way. It's the opening to nature, you know. So if we would listen to that, I think we would be a lot less conquering and destroying the earth as we do now, you know, for whatever, for oil, for wood, for, you know, just always conquering. And the feminine is much more much rounder and more open and more caring, I think. Yeah, and of course, a man can also be like that. I'm not saying just women, you know.
Can you speak a little to some of the impact of the more traditionally patriarchal influence on some of what we're talking about here? That how those more traditional male energies and qualities have caused and perpetuated, let's say, some of these issues?
Well, the patriarchal system is anyway a very, very old system, and it runs our moral system, it runs our laws, our courts, you know, and it runs through religions. All religion are basically patriarchal. It's a male on top and the women are pushed out in one way or the other, you know. So we are used to be run by patriarchal system. And I tend to think it's the patriarchal system, of course, wants to conquer, you know. They want to conquer, stick something into the earth and say, this is mine, yeah?
Either literally or metaphorically, yeah.
Yes, literally and metaphorically, that's what they do. Yeah. Where even today, you know, another more Amazon rainforest, and it's built on greed. Yeah, it's built on competitiveness and on greed. You know, so more, more, more. If I have more, then I'll be a real good guy. You know, if I have a lot of money, if I have a Tesla, then I'll be a great guy. So they're all patriarchal domination, you know. And of course, women have a very, you know, at the most, you can be a pretty wife, or at the most, you have to be a good mother. You know, and there's so many ideas how you should be as a mother. I mean, it's horrible what the pressure that women mothers are under, you know, how you have to be good and caring and loving. And, you know, I talked yesterday with a client, just 4 kids, yeah, and she works, and a husband, you know, normal, but no support. You know, there's no support. Women have to go to work 2 months after they give birth to a baby. So the government doesn't support it. Men don't appreciate it mostly, you know. They think, oh, well, it's just what happens. And so there's so many things that are run through the patriarchal system. And of course, we are all under the gun of it, you know. So we all have to look, and I think we have to look inside of ourselves how we actually are slave in ourselves to that system. And I tend to see it as how I deal with my superego.
And just to explain for those that don't know the term, when you say superego, you mean the inner critic, that critical.
The inner critic and the inner judge, you know. And of course, we all embody the inner judge or the inner critic, and we are all run by the inner critic. Yeah, even though nobody's telling you you don't look good, and your inner critic will go, duk, duk, you look in the mirror, and within 1 second, you put yourself, you know, make yourself this big. Yeah. So I think we have to first deal with our inner critic, men and women, everybody, you know, how much we really embody the system and how much we make it our own. And I think that's the only way, I think, how we can deal with it inside of ourselves. How am I destructive? How am I possessive? How am I submissive to the moral law? You know, and I think we have to face it inside here, and then maybe something can change.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah, well, there's the working with it inside of ourselves, and that inner critic piece is enormously important to that. But there's also the dialogue between men and women, or male and female energy, between what's possible and what supports that dialogue?
Well, I first of all think, especially now, you need to be open to not have the answers. You know, we need to come out of it. This is how it is to be a woman. This is how it is to be a man. This is male. The man should be this protector. The woman should be feminine, blah, 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 blah. I think we have to come out of all these old ideas and be open. And my main thing is always, you know, dare to be vulnerable, really, on both ends. And the big thing, I think, for women, especially with men, and I mean, of course, we have the abuse and we have the disconnection, but the big thing is how, what does a woman really also demands from a man? Yeah, often women keep the whole situation going. You know, you want the man to be strong and save you and have a lot of money and do all these things. Yeah, and if the man then suddenly becomes vulnerable, you know, women go, oh, I don't want that. You know, I want you to be my hero. I want you to be the Superman. I want you to be whatever. Yeah, Tarzan, whatever it is. You
are. beat hairy chest, yeah.
Whatever you project onto there. So I think we need to look at those things, and especially women, and especially because women were so used to be undermining, you know, because we're very much have that victim identity is so big with women, you know, feeling like a victim, and then you become passive aggressive, and then you don't really say what's going on. And I think to learn to be open and to be open with those things and put them on the table and expose it, both sides. And I think maybe then some new meeting can happen, you know, it's possible. But of course, it's in a huge where on the male-female situation, we're in a big revolution, really. It's a huge shift, you know, with transgender and I mean, so many different variations and, wow, you know.
I mean, you already mentioned it, but I'd love to open up a little bit more. That it's almost what I'm hearing you say is it's not discovering and finding more ideas. It's almost letting go of the ideas we already have and allowing ourselves to open to and discover what's in our bodies and what's in another's body. That it feels like it's about, yeah, less of using the mind and more of using the body.
Yes, it's more using the body. And of course, for me, as a woman, as we are, the big thing is always, especially around men, what makes me feel safe? Yeah, I can only really open up to my vulnerability if I feel safe. So if I feel, you know, the man, let's say, is stronger or could be a perpetrator or is going to, you know, maybe an alcoholic and lose it sometimes, whatever it is, when I'm not safe, I can't really open. Yeah. So somehow, I think we have to find a together meeting where safety is possible, you know, on both ends.
What helps create those feelings of safety?
Well, of course, clear agreements, very clear boundaries, you know, and then also you have to work with your shadow side. I think we women have as much, you know, we're identified with the victimhood often. We have as much anger and passive aggressiveness. And I think men anyway have their own violence to deal with, you know. So I think we have to deal with the shadow side. Otherwise, you'll never really know what's on the table, you know, and that has to be looked into. And of course, that's in our work, and that's part of the work, and that's part of why we do the work, you know.
And for those that haven't heard the term shadow before, maybe just, or in the context that you mean, just say a little bit about what, when we talk about one shadow self, what we mean and the impact of not working with that.
Okay, the shadow is like Sigmund Jung, Swiss psychiatrist in the 50s, used that term. And it's just a part, when we grow up, there are certain parts that we are loved for. And let's say you're 3-4 years old and you're loved for being the nice, sweet boy, you know, that is so intelligent and so clever. And yet when you come out and really angry and want to hit your sister because you're frustrated and you know, it's like that is being punished. You don't do those kind of, you can't do that. So we learn from early on, there are certain parts in ourselves that are not welcomed here, you know, and often they're very alive parts and very vital parts, or can be around sexuality also, you know. And we learn to put them away. And then, you know, we use the term, you put them in a backpack. Yeah. And the older we get, I mean, you go to school, you have to be even more nice and on time and be tidy and be good at work and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So more stuff have to be put away. And then by the end, we have a big backpack and our essential nature gets less and less and less. You know, so, and that's what we call the shadow. And the shadow often comes out, of course, in relationships. But we eventually, what we do in order to release that backpack, we project that shadow onto, sometimes onto other people, to our partners, but also to nations. You know, I can say, yeah, Hitler was evil, but I'm not. You know, I hate evil people. Then it gives us a right to hate them. It gives us the right to put them down. But I don't have to own that it actually has something to do with me. You know, how am I destructive in myself? Yeah, what do I do? You know, how do I snap when something happens with the kids? You know, when they drive you crazy and you suddenly start like, ah.
I never do that, just to be
no.
Fair.
No, you're a good guy.
So all in my shadow.
Yeah, only sometimes.
But it's I think it's really helpful, because for us to be able to have constructive, helpful dialogue, productive dialogue around these issues, we have to be owning those parts of ourselves, right? Because if we're projecting them onto the other, or they're coming out in kind of passive aggressive ways, it becomes very difficult to have constructive and ultimately healing dialogue.
Yeah, and especially in relationship, of course, they come up. Your partner will always know exactly what your shadow part is.
It gets exactly exposed. Where the buttons are and exactly, exactly. Where the buttons are.
Yeah. And you feel exactly when she or he says it, so infuriated. I am not like that. It's your fault, you know, and then we push it back, because we don't really want to own that we have those kind of things, you know? And, you know, whatever. I was just pointed out the other day in my relationship that I'm actually have a side of me where I'm very entitled and unconsciously demanding, you know, and egocentric. I was like, me? No. I'm not like that, you know. My whole life I build around not to be like that, you know. The ego compensates and tries not to. And then suddenly to see that was like, you know, made me first really resistant, pissed off, angry. And then I looked at it and suddenly I was like, oh yeah, okay. You know, okay, I can see. I don't want to be like my mom, who was very egocentric and very, very dominating, you know. But then maybe I do it a little bit differently. Yeah, and then it kind of settled, and that really opened up so much inside of myself, you know, so much more presence and opening. And also it opened up more my heart, really, my capacity for loving, you know.
Yes, yeah, that's beautiful. Can you say a little bit about the relationship between this disconnection and ultimately what we're inviting of reconnection, and the relationship with the planet, with the earth around us? You touched on climate change very briefly earlier. But what's that relationship?
Well, I do believe if we come a little bit more off social media and start to really connect more with nature, you know, be able to, or be more into our bodies, you know, be less out there trying to fulfill an idea for how I should be, I think we would slowly, slowly learn to come more home to ourselves. So I think the connection with nature is important. And also because we're so isolated, we long for real contact. We want real contact, not like, yeah, pat, 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 I like you, you know, but so many people long for real connection, that there's somebody there, you're hurting, something is happening, and somebody is really saying, is interested enough to say, hey, how are you? And not like, yeah, 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 next, you know? So I think we long for true connections, and I think the connection with nature is so, so important. Once we start to feel our bodies more, you know, and that's the big key. And of course, we're so addicted to social media and to the bloody iPhone and to the computers and to all these things. It's very hard for people to get away from that. You know, it's really addiction, not to feel the emptiness inside, you know, not to feel boredom, not to feel like the unworthiness. So there's a place where we have to create a space so that people can move through that and feel that also. You know, I work a lot with that, and people, it is there. And people need support to feel it. You know, you can't do it on your own. It's too much.
Well, it's also, it strikes me, the dialogue around climate change, which happens only in the head, becomes a kind of endless path of intellectual debate. And actually, the place that we really have to come from is in our hearts, in our bodies, to actually to feel the impact that we are having on the on the feminine, the mother, you know, Mother Earth, the being that holds and supports us.
Yeah, I mean, instead of looking at your iPhone, you know, go out barefoot in the morning and stand on the grass, yeah, or go and hug a tree, or, you know, we have lots of cows here. Look at the cows and their young ones, you know, bring the kids to nature, bring the kids to animals, you know. I think we more and more forget about these things. It's so, so important, you know, just to be in touch with our bodies. And that will also give us, then that helps us to be in touch with the earth. And out of that, the healing will happen. And of course, when women really allow themselves to feel into their bodies, it comes natural to women. Yeah. But to get there, of course, we have to deal with a lot of issues, you know. But it's possible, you know, many, many women are healing, and many women also are taking that next step, coming out of that victimhood and that endless anger and settling into themselves, you know.
What are the practices that you notice are the most helpful in supporting that journey?
Most helpful is taking time off the internet and sit with yourself and do something that you love to do. It might be cooking, it might be painting, it might be writing, something creative, you know. I think it's, I mostly, when people say meditate, they think they have to sit quietly, but I think meditation happens when you are involved in something that you're passionate about, and then you settle in. You know, it happens easily. And find some way to connect and be out in nature. Find some way to be out there, you know, be in the ocean, and not just once a year for a week when you're totally overworked. And, you know, like you see people alcoholizing themselves through the holidays, you know, that's not really connecting with nature. So it's like find small steps to say hello to your own body. You know, I think especially to say hello and say, hey, even if you're big and round, maybe you can also welcome that, you know, it doesn't matter. I think that's a big step, and that's the big healing that needs to happen for women, especially, you know. Men seem to be a little bit less self-conscious. That's my personal experience, but I might be wrong, in groups and stuff. That seems to be a little bit less shameful. Women really have a big shame in.
What you're saying, what also strikes me is that, in a sense, what we were saying earlier is disconnection feeds disconnection. The more disconnected we get, the more we make choices that disconnect us further. But equally, the inverse is also true, isn't it? That connection feeds connection. That if we can come off the internet and spend more time in nature with our bodies, we're also more likely to make choices that further connect us.
Yes, that's very, very much so. Or, you know, when I'm in Byron, I hang out with friends, and you meet, you go to coffee shop and blah, 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 you know. And now in the last years, I said, let's go for a walk. It's much, much nicer. You know, you talk less, blah, 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 and you're more connected to the birds and the trees and the wind. And it's such a big difference. Yeah. And then, of course, today you have this other thing where people then they do nature, but they do pushy nature. You know, you see the guys here on the bike up and, ooh, and you know, the competitiveness is so strong. Yeah, but it's not really connecting. It's not really being at home with yourself. So whatever gives you that feeling of arriving here, even 1 minute a day, it already is a big difference. Even 5 minutes a day, just to sit down and not drink alcohol or take a drug, but just to be, you know, and touch a tree, you know, kiss your wife, say hello, something like that, something simple. I mean, the thing is so much more simple than what we think, as you know.
And you that's the challenge, isn't it? Sometimes because we're so disconnected and we're so in our heads that we think that the solutions are really complicated, that we've got to go and, you know, read, you know, Ken Wilber's collected works, or we need to go do a 12 month silent meditation retreat. And yeah, it becomes so overwhelming, but it's almost those ideas are a product of the state of overwhelm we're already in. They're not necessarily the things that are going to most support us in that moment.
Yeah, and that's a good example you're giving. Of course, when we're in that exhaust, we always go to an extreme. And I always know when I'm in the extreme, I'm actually still in a trauma reactivity, you know, because trauma happens in extreme. You go extreme this way and then you go extreme that way, you know, and that's why, because the adrenaline gets moving in the body and people want that kick. You know, they're used to adrenaline, so you do something else to get the kick. And actually to come in the middle and be a little lazy and relaxed and sit and touch a tree in the beginning might feel a bit boring. But after a while, of course, it's very, very beautiful. And I find the more, in a way, I work a lot with inquiry, looking what is there, questioning, you know, sitting and saying what is going on and share that with your partner is a wonderful way to arrive in presence, really, in a relationship is wonderful, you know. So
I'm mindful of time, Tariya, but for people that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, we're just opened up a new site called dimensionsofbeing.org, and Rafia Morgan, who will also come and talk to you soon, and I are doing a new online course, and it will start in October, and it's called Initiation into Essence, and it's a beautiful, beautiful initiation into exploring the difference between your ego defenses and your essential nature, and it'll help people to slowly, slowly open up more to it. We need support. You know, it's very difficult for us to do it alone. You know, we're too hooked onto all kinds of things. Many people, you know. So that's one thing. And then I think Rafia will talk about Path of Love. So he'll probably do that also.
And say that there'll be, because I'm mindful that we're pre-recording this interview will actually go out in December, but there'll be another intake, of course, won't there, after the October intake?
Yes.
Yeah, so people could be watching this on replay six months, 12 months time, but if they go to dimensionsofbeing.org, they can then find the upcoming
exactly. So how do you relax? What do you do? Yes. What do you do, you know, to connect with the earth?
So one of the great kind of, I guess, gifts of my life in recent time is we have a farmhouse out in the country we come to at weekends and in holidays. And there's cows at the end of the garden. The kids go horse riding. And my greatest joy is I have a hot tub in the garden. So pretty much twice a day, every day, I try and go in the hot tub. And that's my thing. I love being in water. I love being in nature, and I lie there and that's sort of my way of really coming to my body, you know, beyond obviously my meditation practice and other tools.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love hot tubs too. In Australia, I have a big hot tub and sit there in the morning, even though it's so hot. The hot tub is even hotter. So when you come out, you feel cold.
Exactly. It's as long as you get some contrast, right?
Exactly.
Tariya, thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to spend time together.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Alex.